Hi, welcome to Bookie, which unlock big ideas from world bestsellers in audio, text, and mind map. Please download Bookie at Apple Store or Google Play with more features. Get your free mind snack now. Today we will unlock the book Victoria, the Queen, an intimate biography of the woman who ruled an empire. To overturn the conventional perception, the author depicts a delicate figure at the heart of a mighty empire. In the 19th century, the unstoppable current of history offered Britain opportunities and challenges brought about through the rapid advance of industry, democratization, and urbanization. These were turbulent times of rapid change. To rule an empire encompassing over a quarter of the Earth's population, Alexandrina Victoria, a petite woman who was only 5 feet tall, had to fall back on perseverance and determination. She succeeded in making Britain the most powerful nation on Earth. Her name thus became the marker of the era. Hence, the period has become known as the Victorian era, taking the name of the woman, the queen who reigned over it. To many people, Victoria is the queen who ruled over a mighty empire, an area of the globe so vast that the sun never sets. Victoria was the second longest reigning monarch in British history, a queen who transcended the definition of the constitutional monarchy, becoming the crowned empress of India. She was the ruler whose blind support of expansion at any cost engendered the opium wars between Britain and China. In addition, she was a mother who gave birth to 9 children and spread the hemophilia gene to the royal families of Europe. All of this was recorded in the diary entries she loved to keep. Unfortunately, her diaries were subject to the most extensive censorship after her death. The book Victoria the Queen puts the life of this legendary woman on display. In this book, we learn of her brilliance in juggling high positions, tactical diplomacy, and unyielding determination, as well as her personal troubles and inner conflicts. We see Victoria as a woman playing multiple roles: monarch, head of state, wife, and mother. The New York Times said of the book, "Julia Baird's exquisitely wrought and meticulously researched biography brushes the dusty myth off this extraordinary monarch." In this bookie, we will show you a glimpse of Victoria's life, at times tumultuous and at times mundane, through the following 3 parts. Part 1, Victoria's childhood shaped the young queen to be both determined and willful. Part 2, Victoria's reliance on her husband led England into an era where prince consort was the power behind the throne. Part 3, the queen's soul searching as she played multiple roles as woman, mother, and queen. In the early hours of May 24, 1819, a baby girl was born in a palace in England. She was to be 5th in line to the throne. The reigning king was her grandfather, George III. Her eldest uncle was the Prince of Wales, at the time the Prince Regent, soon to become King George IV. William, her third uncle, was 3rd in line to the throne, and Victoria's father, Edward, the Duke of Kent, was 4th in line. As the only surviving legitimate grandchild of George III, there was a real prospect that this baby girl would one day become the queen. From the moment of her birth, members of the royal household were hostile to the newborn baby. Her uncles, among them the serving Prince Regent, who sired only illegitimate children, considered her to be a thorn in their sides. The prince could not accept that his loathsome brother had given birth to an heir to the throne. Hence, he insisted that the baby's christening be a simple and private ceremony held in the afternoon. In an outrageous move, he did not even permit the Duke and Duchess of Kent to name their daughter. He did not want the child to have a traditional historical name like Elizabeth. Finally, the Prince Regent decided to call his niece Victoria, a name of foreign origin and therefore unpopular in England. Despite rampant royal animosity, the innocent and unsophisticated young Victoria thrived. She was exceptionally strong and exuded energy, her body plump as a partridge. Edward doted on his daughter, saying she was a model of strength and beauty combined. He regarded his daughter as a miracle and a source of immense pride. For this reason, he saw that he personally supervised her upbringing. Victoria's mother, Catherine, the Duchess of Kent, also doted on the baby and insisted on breastfeeding, which was rare for the aristocracy. The first few months of Victoria's life were spent in this way, secure in the infinite love of her parents. Unfortunately, these happy times were short-lived. When Victoria was only 8 months old, her father, Edward, who had always been strong and healthy, died suddenly of an acute illness. His death left Catherine ostracized with his infant daughter, to face a brutal struggle for power at the royal palaces. 6 days after her father's death, Victoria's grandfather George III also passed away due to illness and George IV was crowned king. It meant that Victoria moved a step closer to the throne, becoming third in line. As the real possibility of becoming queen evolved, Victoria's gentle and affectionate mother began to shift her outlook, swiftly changing to become overtly ambitious and power-obsessed. She and her advisor John Conroy became the first trial for Victoria on her path to the throne. Conroy had formerly been Edward's valet. After Edward's death, he used tricks to ingratiate himself with the Duchess and gain her trust. He became the person she most relied on. He started to boss the young Victoria and even, on occasion, maliciously mocked and belittled the young princess's looks. Conroy sought to isolate Victoria from the rest of the royal family. He dismissed the attendants, who had been with her since birth. Together with the Duchess, he concocted the details of a harsh rehabilitation program for Victoria that he called the Kensington System. The system's primary purpose was to ensure control over the young princess. Under this system, Victoria was forbidden to be alone at any time. If she wanted to so much as go down the stairs, she had to hold an adult's hand. She had to be accompanied by a servant even when watering the flowers and supervised when playing with other children. Rigorously monitored, there was no childish fun in Victoria's life, only depressing constant adult surveillance. It was a grueling ordeal for the impetuous, tantrum-prone, disobedient young Victoria. She disliked sitting upright, hated taking medicines, and detested being ordered around. When she was 9 years old, other than her half-sister, with whom she was very close, Victoria had not a single friend. She was mortified when this half-sister married and moved to Germany. In her diary, Victoria described the desultory period. "I had a very unhappy life as a child, had no scope for my very violent feelings of affection, had no brothers and sisters to live with, never had a father, from my unfortunate circumstances was not on a comfortable or at all intimate or confidential footing with my mother, and did not know what a happy domestic life was." After the departure of her only friend, despite having all sorts of toys, fancy clothes, and pets, she was awfully lonely and hungry for spiritual solace. In 1830, George IV passed away. The new king, William IV, was in his 60s, which made it likely that Victoria would inherit the throne in the near future. Conroy and the Duchess rapidly began to plot to seize power. They made two demands of Victoria. First, once Victoria was crowned, Conroy should be appointed her private secretary and be granted a place in the House of Lords. Second, if the king died before Victoria reached 21, the Duchess should become the regent and rule in Victoria's stead. To their surprise, young Victoria showed the bold side of her character. She stared coldly at her mother and said, "No." Even when Conroy forced a pen and paper into her hands, she still shook her head and refused to comply. Instead, she just pulled her beloved dog, Dash, closer and closer. Bullied for years by Conroy, Victoria never intended to forgive him. But he still resorted to both carrots and sticks, deploying various methods to force her to agree to his and her mother's demands. To coax the princess, he solicited all sorts of mutually trusted people and even went so far as to lock her up, but no one and nothing could soften her determination. Finally, with the help of her most trusted governess, Baroness Louise Lezen, Victoria mustered the courage to foil all Conroy's scheming. She was excited but calm and tranquil, sensing that she was close to inheriting the power of the throne. Although she was not sure she was equal to the task, the young princess was confident that her good intentions, honesty, and fortitude would help her succeed. She said, "I shall not fail." The words became her motto in later life. And the day finally arrived. In the early morning of June 20, 1837, King William IV passed away and Victoria ascended the throne. On this day, she wrote in her diary, "Since it has pleased Providence to place me in this station, I shall do my utmost to fulfill my duty toward my country. I am very young and perhaps in many, though not in all things, inexperienced, but I am sure that very few have more real goodwill and more real desire to do what is fit and right than I have." With such courage and conviction, she was able to conduct herself at the Privy Council meeting held that morning with decency and calmness. She delivered her inaugural speech with such fluency and eloquence that she greatly surprised and moved everyone sitting in the room. They gave the young queen unstinting praise and were charmed by the young girl's poise and coolness in public. Suddenly, the whole country fell in love with Victoria. All social circles were discussing her beauty, intelligence, kindness, and composure. At this same time, Victoria gained the endorsement and loyalty of the Whigs and Prime Minister Lord Melbourne. Victoria immediately favored the gentle Prime Minister. With Melbourne's support, the Queen's first move was to remove Conroy from her residence before requesting that her mother adhere strictly to royal protocol. The moment had finally arrived for Victoria to monopolize power. Upon Victoria's ascension to the throne, many people gladly swore their allegiance to Victoria. However, she was still young, and despite brimming with confidence and courage, she lacked political wisdom. Consequently, in the early days of her reign, two palace scandals brought disgrace on her just as her fortune seemed to be on the rise. The first scandal centered around Lady Flora Hastings, a British aristocrat who had been a lady-in-waiting to the Duchess of Kent for 5 years. Victoria had always been wary of her, owing to her intimacy with the Duchess and Conroy. In January 1839, Lady Flora returned to London in a carriage with Conroy after spending Christmas with her mother in Ireland. It didn't take long for people to notice Lady Flora's bulging belly. The sight sent the royal courtiers' imagination soaring. Many people, including the Queen, were convinced that Lady Flora must be pregnant with Conroy's child. However, her swollen belly later proved to be a symptom of an illness, hitherto unidentified, thanks to the medical incompetence of royal physician Dr. James Clark. The intrigue became compounded by rumor because Lady Flora was suspected of having been secretly married. Under the pressure of public opinion, Lady Flora had to undergo a rough, lengthy, painful, and humiliating medical examination to finally produce a certificate of her virginity. Lady Flora's family were outraged by the humiliation she had gone through. They demanded her reputation be restored, and, in collusion, the Duchess demanded Dr. Clark be dismissed. But Victoria and Melbourne refused to act against the incompetent doctor. Unsatisfied with the Queen's response, the Hastings family leaked the story to the press to expose the faults of the royal court, turning an inside story into a public scandal. During this period, the Prime Minister, Lord Melbourne, had been misadvising the Queen, thinking he was catering to Victoria's best interests. Victoria was utterly unaware of her unpopular mistake in supporting Dr. Clark. The incident drew months of attention from people throughout London. Only a little later, Lady Flora passed away with a grossly enlarged liver. Her untimely death reignited public anger and resulted in a challenge to Victoria's authority and an unwanted disgrace to her royal office. Another scandal involved Melbourne. The association between Victoria and her Prime Minister is considered one of the most famous platonic romances in modern history. The relationship was formed from the close connection of their life experiences. Victoria had grown up lacking fatherly love, while Melbourne, who had lost his wife and son, had nowhere to express all his affection. As a result, both had a deep investment in their civic relationship and certainly reaped many benefits from it, emotional as well as concerned with affairs of state. When the Queen enjoyed Melbourne's guidance, Lord Melbourne, in turn, moved up the social ladder. But Melbourne did not meet the standards of a great leader. He lacked enthusiasm for politics and focused most of his efforts on avoiding conflict. Furthermore, he disregarded persistent social problems. When it came to guiding the young queen, he failed in three important respects. Firstly, he didn't ease the tense relationship between Victoria and her mother. Secondly, he failed to make Victoria sufficiently aware that she was the ruler of the whole United Kingdom and that she had the constitutional duty of impartiality. Thirdly, Melbourne failed to inspire her. He did nothing to bolster her budding sense of social responsibility. Instead, he fostered the notion that all social uprising or calls for reform were merely instigated by minority groups of marginal and disgruntled people. Melbourne gradually lost his grip on power. His authority was not helped by the detrimental effects of the Hastings affair, and ultimately Sir Robert Peel, a Tory, replaced Melbourne as Prime Minister in May 1839. Although Melbourne advised Victoria that Peel was an excellent statesman and that the Queen must not show him any displeasure, she was distracted, lamenting the loss of the man who had charmed her and made her feel loved for the first time in her life. To Victoria, Melbourne was irreplaceable. So, it was inevitable that she did not have even the slightest affection for the new fellow. Consequently, she was severe with Peel and refused to cooperate, making it impossible for Peel to form a new government. Because of the Queen's stubborn determination, Peel was forced to resign after only a few days in office, and Melbourne was reinstated, regaining power. On the surface, the new equilibrium may have seemed to restore peace, but the Queen ousting a Prime Minister cast a dark shadow on the royal court. At the end of her long life, Victoria herself admitted that she made a mistake at this time, putting it down to youth and inexperience. Today we are just sharing limited content. To unlock more key insights of world-class bestseller, please download our app. Just search for Bookie at Apple Store or Google Play, get your free mind snack now.